Welcome to 216, a Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I am your host, Fear Agent. Back to wrap up season number 5. Took a little bit of a break. Went a little bit longer than I had planned. I've been gone for about 4 weeks or so. But I didn't forget about 216. In fact, we've been recording episodes through this break and have been stacking them up. So I have a good run here to end season number 5. And today on the show, we've got Vex Topher. So great conversation with Vex. Good way to come back to finish up this the second half of season number 5. Lots been going on. Rando stuff is happening. I don't really know. Ramon and I are in the top 16 of the co-op tournament. We're going up against Schulzer and Yoshi. We lost game number 1, which we got to choose, which was Cross Keys, which was, of course, our name is Cross Keys, Please. So it made sense that we'd choose Cross Keys for that. Schulzer and Yoshi are really good, and we had some unfortunate things happening. So, lost game number 1. Game number 2 is an Enemizer, and neither one of us are really Enemizer runners, so could be out here shortly. In fact, by the time this comes out, we might even be eliminated, but we'll see. We'll try to make it to game 3 and give them a good go if we get to co-op AD. But it's a tough matchup. So there's that. What else? Been playing some Retrants Invitational. Started 5-0, then dropped 3. And then picked up another win. So I think I'm currently 6-3. I've got to do one more race just to qualify as far as like the amount of races that I've done. But I'll probably try to make my record a little bit better before the end of the season, which isn't until, I think, May. So plenty of time for that. No rush there. I think that's all of the rando stuff. The TARC elections are going to be coming up next month. And we'll announce who's stepping down. I can say here, I'm stepping down. I think it's time for new blood. I've done pretty much everything that I can here in the rando scene. Been a part of the first council, been a part of the first TARC, created the league, created the co-op cross keys tournament, a big part of the speed gaming dailies back in 2018, 2019. I've done a lot. And it's time for people with fresher takes and people that are more connected to what's going on. Because there's a lot of changes. A lot of things are happening with, you know, the change to the auto tracker and different tracking and different, like, just there's so many different modes with the Doors branch, which is becoming more and more and more of the main branch than even the main branch, the VT branch. So I just think we need people that are more connected to all of that. And I feel like I've done my part. So, yeah, I'll be stepping back in May. And hopefully someone that is more motivated to be connected and in the know of all of it will be my replacement. Also, a lot of cheating, just so much cheating going on. That's always a bummer. And I always hate dealing with that. So glad to be done with that. Glad to be a part of TARC. But yeah, my rando days are definitely inching away. I'm playing less and less rando. And you know, I'm enjoying the stuff that I do play. I've been enjoying the Retrants. I really enjoyed the co-op tournament with Ramond. I know Survivors of Hyrule is coming up, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, my time in rando is dwindling. So we'll see what the future looks like as far as rando goes. But, you know, Cross Keys tournament, I'm kind of interested in that. We'll see if I'm around for that. Don't think I'll be doing any of the open tournaments or standard tournaments, anything that doesn't involve entrance, I probably won't join. So that means like no main tournament. And then we'll see where I'm at when the league comes around next year. So it's weird to be at like peace with where everything is. Like I'm not really that tilted when I lose, as I have been in the past, unless I'm racing Gamma. That's the only caveat. If I'm racing Gamma, then I get a little bit more tilted. But you know, I lost some races in the Retrants ladder to some really good runners, Mr. Ed, Specs, and of course Wally, and you know, took them a stride. So I feel like the podcast has helped me grow. A lot of my personal stuff has allowed me to grow as well. So I just don't get as tilted. I think if I was more invested in it, I was doing it every day or multiple races a day, I'd have to learn how to manage it a little bit better. But since I do, you know, a race a week, every other 3 days or something, it's not that big of a deal when I do lose, which happens often. So yeah, feel good about that. So yeah, that's all the rando stuff. The big thing that's been going on, and if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear me talk a lot about Baldur's Gate 3. And I finally was able to beat the game solo So no members in my party on honor mode. And it took me, seven, eight, nine tries. Like there was attempts that didn't last very long. And then there were some attempts like the one previous to this one where I made it to the second last boss. I made it to Orin and I just kind of froze. And I feel like that's happened a couple of different times. When I got to Kethric, the first time solo, I froze. I totally forgot what I was trying to do and ended up dying. It happened again with Orin, which was really sucky because it was right before the end. But this time I was able to make it all the way through. I played as a ranger. So I had five classes in ranger. I'm going to get real nerdy here for a bit about Baldur's Gate 3. So if you want to fast forward through this, that's super fine. You want to get to the interview, but it was a huge accomplishment for myself. I was very happy to do this and to defeat it because I played through honor mode. With the regular four people in your party. It was pretty tough. And then I did it with two people in my party, and that was pretty tough. And then I went solo. And solo, again, took me multiple attempts where I died multiple times and learned a ton. So I was a five-class ranger, four classes in rogue, one class in cleric. It was a war cleric. And then two classes in fighter, which gives me accent surge. So I was able to do a lot of the image with the character that I had. She was a drow and a charlatan. So what I do is because I've done the opening so many different times now, is I actually start off as a bard. Until you hit level 4, you really don't want to fight because you can just get taken out super easy, no matter what class you're in. So as a bard, I'm able to BS my way through most of the encounters, and as a drow you're able to get through a lot of stuff early game as well. So four classes of bard, and then at 4 I respec and go four classes of ranger, hit my fifth class of ranger, and then do a class of cleric, and then start multi-classing into a rogue. Yeah, and it was super fun. So it wasn't just about completing it was trying to complete as much as I could. So I've seen like solo runs where I basically skip the entire first act and head in directly into act 2. And that gets you a bunch of experience points early, but you miss out on a ton of quests. And I really wanted to do as many of the quests as I could. So I'm going to talk a little bit of spoilers here. Like I did all of the Thorms. So Kethric obviously is the main one, but his son, his brother and his sister, I think, I killed all of them. All of the Githyanki stuff in the creche I did. Ethel in Act 1, I beat her and got the hag's hair, so you like don't actually defeat her there. That's always a scary one because a hold person can just destroy your entire run. It's not a beholder, but a beholder-like creature. I can't remember what it's called. That's in the Underdark. I killed that. Did Grimm in the Grimforge. Killed Nier. Killed all three goblin leaders in Act 1, revealed the shadow druids, killed them, the harpies, that's can be a scary one too. I killed them. I'm trying to think in Act 1 and Act 2 if there's any other bosses that I'm missing. You know, confront the Githyanki in Act 1 is always scary, but there's ways around that. I think that's everything, all of the bosses that I can think of in the first two acts. And then in Act 3, Answer the Dragon, that's always a scary one, but did that. Cazador the Vampire, did that. The Sharn Cloister, I can't remember her name, but did that. Of course, Gortash and Orin. Oh, one of my favorite quests in the entire run of BG3 is you go into the Iron Prison underground and you have 5 turns to try to rescue everyone. It's super fun. I think that the added timer adds a little bit something to the whole combat. And I was able to rescue everybody by myself in 5 turns. That felt like a real huge win. So I was really proud of that one. I'm trying to think. The Steel Watchers, whatever the main big bad Steel Watcher is, I killed that. Yeah, all the stuff, the ball stuff. There's a zombie guy where you got to kill his heart, find his heart and kill it to kill him. I did that. Did everything with Nine Fingers and the Guild, saved Stone Lord. Oh, Marcus in Act 2 killed him and the spider that has the lantern that you need. I'm trying to come up with everything that I did because it's a lot. And I didn't skimp on any of it. So not only did I defeat the main portions of the game, but I did all of the mini bosses too. So that felt really, really cool. So it's not like I just tried to hit the main things. I did all of the side quests that I could. So yeah, super happy about that. I've done pretty much everything that you can do in Baldur's Gate 3. Love the game. Really sad that Larian Studios is moving on. Excited for whatever they do next. It just won't be Baldur's Gate 4 and there won't be any DLC. So sad about that kind of stuff, but excited for what they do next because they knocked it out with Baldur's Gate 3. And if they're not even tied to the D&D system, I think they could probably even do some cooler things. Like I've been playing a little bit of Divinity Original Sin 2. Doesn't quite work as well. I don't love the system as much as I do in Baldur's Gate using D&D 5e rules. But whatever they come up with next, I think they've learned from it. So we'll see what they come up with next. And super excited about that. But can't recommend Baldur's Gate 3 enough. And thanks for just listening to me ramble about it because I love it. The last run I did, the solo run, was one of my favorite gaming moments of my entire life. So that was really, really cool. All right. Well, enough of that. Let's get to Vextover. I had the pleasure of talking with Vex in SGL. We rode together to the Texas Day Brazil and were able to have some good conversations there and sat together and chatted a bit there. And he was kind of all over the place. And it was my real first interaction with Vex. Dude can talk and I love listening to him talk. So was excited to have him on the show. And we kind of picked things up talking about Texas Day Brazil. We had a good time there. So let's get to it. Here's Vextover. You know when we went to, what was that, Texas Day Brazil when we were in SGL?
Yeah, steakhouse.
Dude, that was one of the most insane experiences I had just from trying to pay experience. Not even like the food. The food was good, right? Like, I enjoy food.
The food was fine.
But it was something that I've never experienced. Like, it took us, like, how long was it? 45 minutes to check out?
Like, more than that. Like, well, so we got there with a really big group, right? And there were two. We had to have two tables because there were too many people for one of the reservations. And so, like, we let them go first, like the other group. And then they were like, yeah, it'll just be a minute. And there's, like, not that many people in there. There were, like, tons of space in the restaurant at the time. And I just remember standing there. I think we just sat and chilled for, like, almost an hour waiting for them to seat us to begin with.
Right.
I think, what, like, Trinex and a couple other people, they bought drinks and like I think they had two drinks apiece before they even started to set down.
Yeah. The other table got there a bit earlier than we did.
Yeah, well they
got to sit down faster than we did.
Oh yeah, they were like before we even like got our food and sat down, they were like done. And we all got there around the same time. It was not that different.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, I just remember you sitting beside because we were sitting next to each other and I just remember you turning around and you're just waving at the guy that was supposed to have our table. And I swear that you guys had this like nice little relationship going on because you kept waving at each other, but nothing ever happened. We just sat there.
What was so weird is like he brought one checkout for, it was a group of what, 12 of us or something like that?
More than that. It was a lot.
And so then I was like, I remember taking charge and like, all right, how about we just give him our cards? It's like, hey, this is just, split it 11 ways or whatever, however many people.
Yeah, nobody cared.
I just remember the giant stack of cards and handing it to him. And then he's kind of like, he kind of looked at me like super weird. And then he was gone for a really long time. I thought, oh man, it must take him a long time to process the 13, 12, 11 cards he had or whatever, right? But no, he comes back with separate checks. He didn't even, it took all that time and he didn't even run our cards. It was insane.
No, it was crazy. Well, that and there were even times when it was just like they kind of gave up on bringing food to us. Like
that was weird. That was super weird. Yeah, I didn't know why everyone still had like the green up too. It was strange, but it was an experience because that was like one of my first times really like interacting with you. We got to chat quite a bit since we were in that prison of a Texas Day Brazil for a while.
Also, I think it was just you and I were the only two in my car when we drove.
Yeah. Yeah. So you actually don't live that far from where SGL is held, right?
No. Like, so I'm in Cumberland, Maryland, which is like west of the DC area. So it's like 2 hours. It's actually like an hour and 50 minutes, hour 45 minutes away from Herndon, which is about 2 hours from Dulles, right?
Okay.
Which it's nice out here because it's it's true Appalachia, right? Mm-hmm. But it's pretty far from an airport, for one. Mm-hmm. And so since I don't have any family in the area, and my wife doesn't either, if we need to go visit family or want to go visit family, it's kind of an ordeal. Because it's a 2-hour drive to the nearest airport, and it's either Dulles or Baltimore or Reagan or Pittsburgh. Right? Because we live like right in the middle of all three of those, like DC, Pittsburgh, Baltimore. We live smack dab in the middle. And wow. So it's the same distance from all three. It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes or so. And now with the kid, that's a 2 hours in the car.
Yeah, for sure. Is that where you grew up? Have you always been there?
No, I have absolutely no connections to Maryland at all.
Oh,
other than the fact that I now live there. Yeah.
How long have you been there for?
So we bought the house right when we moved out here, 2017. So we closed on the house in like the last couple of days of December in 2017. Okay. Since 2018. So 6 years, a little over.
Work send you out there?
Yeah. So I got a job out of school. And then we got out at the Rocket Motor Factory, actually in West Virginia. And then I live in Maryland because Western Maryland, West Virginia area, it's kind of like overlap.
You grew up in Maryland?
Nope. I grew up in Indiana.
Oh, okay. So quite the trek then.
And I did graduate school stuff in Utah, and I met my wife in Utah. And then we drove out from Utah all the way to Maryland. We stayed in an Airbnb for a month. After we moved out there, because this is a ridiculous story because it's December, right? And it's Appalachia, Western Maryland. It's very West Virginia, like national foresty kind of area. And there's this kind of park, or I guess there's a state park, but this is area called Mount Storm. And there's like a power plant up there. There's a bunch of Airbnbs. It's kind of literally the middle of nowhere. It's really the middle of nowhere. But we had two pets at the time. And there was no place. We were closing on the house, right? So we had came out a month earlier to visit and kind of found a house that we liked, and we put an offer in and everything. And we were going through all the paperwork to close on the house, and we knew it wasn't going to get done until the end of December. I couldn't do any, rent for a month because no one would do month-to-month rents. They need a lease.
Right.
And then anywhere that could only do a month didn't have internet, which I actually can't right. live for a month without internet.
I mean, how could anyone live without a month without internet?
And they had to take pets, right? Two pets. And so we stayed in this cabin at the top of what they call Mount Storm. And if the name is any indication, and believe me, it is like the most windy, steep, super sharp turns everywhere, like going up this hill. And it was about 50 minutes or so, well, it was about 35 minutes, but really it was 50 because it was December away from where I worked. And so I had an hour long commute every morning while I was there.
Wow.
And it was snowy. I had a 1995 Chevy Lumina that I had since high school. It was not very good in the snow and ice because, again, it's December on the East Coast.
Oh, man.
So it probably took me an hour and a half to get home some days if it was snowy. I somehow made it, but one day my wife had to actually come pick me up at Kaiser, West Virginia is kind of the town that's, I guess, closest to there. She had to come pick me up in her truck with all wheel drive because I was four wheel drive because I couldn't make it up the hill in the Lumina. So I had to park at a Walmart in Kaiser.
That's hilarious.
Only once. And then everybody at work was like, where are you staying? Mount Storm. Yeah. Why the heck are you? Why? Why are you Mount Storm? It was just a terrible situation because there was no place for me to stay with two pets, and my wife could stay there. That was comfortable enough for them to all live.
Yeah.
Close enough to work for me to drive. And I only needed a month's worth of staying because we were going to have the house closed on.
Right.
And so it's an interesting experience. My wife loved it. She's like middle of nowhere, had the pets, got to go hiking every day. Yeah. She had a great time, but it was like terrifying driving. One day on the way home, got hit a deer, obviously.
Oh, geez.
Right before we closed on the house, I hit a deer.
Oh no.
Well, okay. I don't know if anybody's ever hit deer before or gotten hit by a deer. I like to say I got hit by a deer because really I'm going 60 down the highway and the deer jumped and headbutted my driver's side door.
Oh my god.
I didn't really hit the deer. The deer hit me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, same difference. It still broke the door on my car and it was a mess. So yeah, that was good. Then we closed on the house and there we go. We've been in the house ever since. So
nice.
That was good. 2017, 18, good time to buy a house.
Oh, yeah, because we're trying to buy a house now. And it's terrible. So it's safe to say where you're at now is way different than what you grew up with, right?
You know, maybe. I don't know. Not really. So Cumberland was used to be a canal, like the canal, the big bike trail that goes pretty much from Pittsburgh all the way to D.C. runs right through the Gap Trail. It runs right through Cumberland. So there's a lot of like outdoor biking trips that come through here and stuff. But it used to be a big industry, like big on industry because of the canal and the railroad was here, like big railroad stuff. And there was a lot of industry, but like the kind of the area, I guess, has kind of slowly, you know, as industry generally has kind of focused on several different places, none of which are Maryland.
Mm.
Now that it kind of has, you know, declined a little bit in population and the good jobs around the area and things like that. And so it really has a small town feel. There's probably 20, 25, 30 something thousand people, maybe 100,000 in the whole like in city little places in the area. Right.
Mm.
And that's like kind of crossed over from West Virginia and Maryland. So it's kind of small, but I grew up in an even smaller town in Indiana.
Okay.
So I grew up in Indiana, in Southern Indiana. So if Indiana is like a boot, the toe of the boot is the county that I was from. It's called Posey County. I grew up in a little town called Poseyville.
Wow.
Yeah. So we didn't have a stoplight at all in the town. There was like several stop signs, but no stoplights, nothing like that. No, it was like 45 minutes to the nearest Walmart. It was a small town vibes. Right. And so Cumberland is actually bigger than where I grew up, but it still has that kind of small towny rural feel to it. There's a lot more hills here than there were in Indiana. We had cornfields.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, the difference between like when you go from Indiana to almost anywhere else. It's like I picture Indiana as being pretty flat.
Yeah, we had cornfields. We have hills here. They had cornfields in Indiana back when we were growing up. Cornfields, soybeans, wheat. Actually, Posey County, there's this thing. The railroad went through there as well, and that county and the county next to it, actually, watermelon was like a huge crop. So there were watermelon fields like all over the place, like right next to my house, like across the street from my house is a big old watermelon field.
Oh,
and
wow.
So we always had like fresh watermelon growing up. So my wife likes to say I'm a watermelon purist. Like if it's crappy watermelon, I'm like, this watermelon's crap.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. Oh, man. Free watermelon or just like not necessarily free, but like, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah, my grandpa knows all the farmers because he's been in the area or had been in the area for, you know, years and years and years. And so he had like free permission to just like walk across the street and grab them from the field directly himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have all the stands like where they pick them. They have like just kind of, I guess, big carts that they just stack them up. And like you can kind of drive down a street near the house and a bunch of the farmers would just have some like their extra that they didn't sell off, that just watermelon and cantaloupe and stuff. And so what, it's like $4 for a watermelon that's probably like, you know, 12 feet long or 12 feet, 12 feet. It's more than a foot, maybe 2 feet long. Yeah. But yeah, no. And so we had watermelon like all the time, picnics, whatever, cantaloupe, watermelon all the time.
Was your family farming too?
No. So my grandpa owned a bunch of farmland, but he rented it out to a guy.
Okay.
So my whole family lives on the street. The street was like, it's called like Wasmer Road, which is my grandpa's surname. And
wow.
Like the whole road is a gravel road. Like no chip and steel, no asphalt, man. It's gravel road. Yeah, he owned a bunch of farmland. He rented it out. But only my family lives on this road. So it's like I have two aunts that live there. My grandpa lives there. And then my mom was there. On my mom's side of the family. And so it was a very, very close knit, you know, kind of family. Yeah. Everybody kind of stayed in the area. Not very many people had moved away and everything like that. And so it's a little weird for me, I guess, being in Maryland now, which is a good 8 and a half hour drive back to where I'm from in Indiana.
You're lonely compared to what it was like growing up, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, family, all of my birthday parties and stuff, you'd have like every aunt and uncle would come to every birthday party for every cousin. Like, no, it was we had that going, but now like I've got no real family in the area. But no, I like it out here. Sure. I would say that the climate's better a little bit. It's less humid out in my wife won't agree with this, but it is much less humid in Western Maryland than it was in Southern Indiana. Okay. Southern Indiana was like being in Florida. It was like 100% humidity in the summer, like all the time. It was awful. Like it feels like you're in a blanket when you're just walking around.
See, I'm from the West Coast and we don't have, it's not humid over here. Like we don't have that humidity. So when I was, whenever I go to the East Coast, and it's only been a handful of times, but like when I was in Jersey for school, I didn't know how to handle the humidity. It's just like, you're like constantly wet.
Yeah, it's stifling.
Gross. It's just so weird. And so even this last time we were over there, it was November, it was still, you know, pretty cold, but it still have had that tinge of humidity that it was just like, I don't know. It's just a totally different feeling.
I was in Utah for 5 years. People always say, you know, it's a dry heat, so it's not so bad. But like, it's true. It's so much. It could be 100 degrees in Utah. It feels better than 80 and humid.
It does. It's crazy. So what was gaming like when you're growing up in this small little town? Were you playing a lot of video games?
That was about all there was to do for me, right? You know, there was sports stuff, band stuff, and games. Because, I mean, or obviously in like going out with the dad, the hikes and all that kind of stuff, the outside stuff. But like when you're inside, I mean, TV or games. And so I remember getting a Super Nintendo. I don't even know. I was probably 4 years old or so. That'd be like 92 or something. Well, not 92. It'd be like 94.
Okay. 93.
I don't know. Super Nintendo was pretty long lived, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, both Nintendo and the Super Nintendo, I felt like had a pretty healthy lifespan.
Yeah. And so my cousins had like right now, one of the cousins on the street, right? They had a regular Nintendo. We'd go up there for a while. And then one Christmas, we got a Super Nintendo. And so we had the Super Nintendo. My cousin had the regular Nintendo. And so that's kind of where gaming started. We'd go over there. They'd come over to our place and stuff. I did a lot of gaming when I was little.
Do you remember what you're playing on the Super Nintendo?
Well, so my uncle was actually big. This is a different uncle than the one with the cousins, right? Okay. The other uncle that lived on the street. He as an adult was pretty into games, and so he had a big old Super Nintendo collection, and we'd go over and borrow games, or he'd give us games and stuff, and so we'd play those. But Mega Man X was one of the first ones I remember. When we got the Super Nintendo, though, Link to the Past was actually the game that came with the Super Nintendo, right? That was like the one that was packaged together.
Oh wow, that's,
you know,
cool.
Back when they used to package a game with a console, right?
Yeah.
But that was there. And my dad's probably about 6'5", and he's the consummate outdoorsman, right? So he's an outside kind of person, like no TV, sports, but that's it. Like always has to be doing stuff. But I can remember, and I still remember this, that he played A Link to the Past with my brother and I. My brother's 3 years younger than me, so he was real little. But my dad would try to beat A Link to the Past, which my dad does not play video games ever. Like never. That's the only game in my life that I ever remember him playing.
Wow.
Is playing A Link to the Past with us. But now, like, I remember like my cousins would come babysit us, you know, and we'd play Donkey Kong Country. That was the other thing. We'd play DK 1 and 2 and 3. So we did those with the babysitter. So that was someone who was, of course, my cousin.
Of course. I mean, if you have the whole family on the street, then why not? It makes it way easier. Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, so just I have one brother. He's about 3 years younger. He is 3 years younger than me.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a graphic designer now. He works for Arizona State University, their athletic department. He's a graphic designer, so he's on the other side of the country for me. He lives in Phoenix.
Nice. So yeah, did you guys have a good relationship as far as you kicking his ass in video games, or did you? I don't know. What was it like?
Yeah, we played a lot of co-op. We played a lot of, like, when we could find co-op games, Turtles in Time.
Yes. Yeah, those,
like, this is probably our favorite game, like, ever. Yeah. Like, to play co-op.
Sure.
You know, we'd switch off. We'd play games. Mega Man X, played a lot of Mega Man X, too, just switching off between us. Obviously, Super Mario World thing. Basically, you know, any Super Nintendo game, we probably played it. And we played it together because he was just a little younger than me. I mostly beat him at ping pong.
Oh, okay.
We had a ping pong table out in the garage.
Nice.
My favorite braggart story is, like, you know, I was older than him. This is the crowning achievement or anything, but I beat him with a whisk broom, like a little hand broom.
Okay.
Like, instead of a ping pong paddle, just to mess with him.
That's awesome. Just rub salt in his little face. I love it. So after the Super Nintendo, what came next? Did you guys stick with Nintendo, or did your interest evolve into other stuff? Like, what else were you doing You said you played a little bit of sports, right?
So I played baseball for a while, and then I realized that I was far too jumpy to play live pitch baseball because like the ball would come at me and I would be like jumpy. Like it just did not work for me.
But I
played basketball up through junior high, and then I played tennis in high school and for a while. But other than that, I kind of dropped all that and joined the marching band and the band. So I played the trumpet. So I did a bunch of band stuff, more so than sports after, you know, for high school.
Nice.
But yeah, no. So gaming wise, so at one point when the Nintendo 64 came out, like my parents got us that right away. And we did, you know, I played some Nintendo 64, but my brother played significantly more Nintendo 64 than I did. Obviously I remember, you know, many, many nights with the cousins over playing Smash Brothers though. And I was kind of the jerk that played Donkey Kong and just like, I'd just do the jumping ground slam, like just slam people off the edge. It was bad. I don't know. I was not good. I will never admit that I'm good at the Nintendo 64 version of Super Smash Brothers, but we had a good time. It was always fun.
Why do you think it was that you didn't play as much of it? Was it just you were busy with other things?
No, I switched to a PC. I personally switched over to PC gaming like almost exclusively. So
that's
I guess
pretty early then. Like we're talking like 97 ish.
Probably 798, like dial up. Yeah, no, I'd play StarCraft, like the original StarCraft on like pre Brood War, like just on dial up, right?
Wow.
Yeah, we're really pushing it.
Yeah. Yeah, your parents were cool with that because you obviously had to use the phone line, you know, like I remember when we first had to use the internet, it's like, Mom, can I use the internet? And like, I guess, but you only have a certain amount of time because we don't, you know, you don't have a phone while you're doing that.
Yeah, I mean, kind of part of it with my family all being like pretty much in the area. It was if they needed something, they'd drive a golf cart down the gravel road over to the house and say, "Hey, what's up?"
Right. Yeah.
We switched over to a DSL fairly soon. As soon as that started going, it was a DSL connection, which was not a good connection, and it's still actually terrible at home. Like my internet at home is like actually awful. Like it's pretty bad.
I mean, it's better than dial up, but not by much. Right?
Not by very much.
Yeah.
Well, plus we're out in the middle of nowhere, right? And so there's no other choice other than, you know, satellite and internet. Like even the phone, like if you did like AT&T or Verizon or something like that kind of internet, it would not be good because there's no it's middle of fields everywhere, right? And there's just no reason for them to expand it out there. And so the DSL, you're supposed to get like 30 megabytes down. I think we got one. That was I think they still get they get like 2.5 now or something still back at home. Like they don't get internet. You can't hardly even stream TV.
How did you play games back then as games started to expand and require more resource?
Well, so the PC was good, but like honestly, you know, 50 megs down for old Battle.net or whatever was not bad. Like it was fine. Like, I mean, I played after StarCraft, I mean, obviously there was the Diablo 2 age. I played a bunch of that. And then really, I think we played, I started playing Counter-Strike Source, not 1.6. Okay. I played Source when it started coming out like a lot and like an embarrassing amount.
Sure. I love it. Yeah, one of my favorites for sure.
The internet connection was not like, wasn't bad, right? It was, it wasn't good, right? Now, knowing what I have now.
Right.
Back then, that it was fine. I mean, you could play a game, but you couldn't watch a YouTube video while playing a game.
Right.
But it wasn't like your ping was so high that you couldn't really play. But all through high school, actually, I guess junior high and into high school, I played a ton of Counter-Strike Source.
Did you have a clan?
Oh, yeah, no. So we played on a set of community servers called, Noob Galore. I think that's what it was called.
Nice.
Played Noob Galore and... they started a competitive team. This is back in the days when they had the Cal League.
I remember.
CAL, right? Yeah. Cal League, man. Cyber Athletic Amateur League. We played Cal. There's a group of us that played that for a while. We played maybe three seasons of Cal Open. We got to Cal Inter when they started IM. We got invited to play in IM. So we played IM, played with a team called Love for a couple years. And then I played with a team called Pound It. That was probably the team we went the furthest, the most serious with. So this is back before Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like now it's a hashtag, right?
Right.
So everybody sees like a hashtag,
right?
They're like, oh,
it's pound, yeah.
It used to be the pound sign because of IRC chat.
Yeah.
Right? Or like in the phone. And so all the scrims and things you would set up competitively in Counter-Strike Source would they were all through several different IRC channels.
Right.
So we'd set those scrimmages up and we'd play. We were very, very competitive. Like we were, was the Calmain at the time. We're just about to get invited to that before, I guess, I don't even know what year this was, probably 2008 or 9. The Cal League actually sold the domain and everything to some company in the United Arab Emirates, like UAE, and then it just never actually came back, and so it died completely. Wow. Right, and that's before matchmaking and everything, and like Go and things like that. And so, but no, I played, I don't know, 10 years almost of Counter-Strike Source, like a lot of Counter-Strike Source, to the point where like I felt actually skilled.
That's awesome. Did you have a specialty? Were you the op guy or? I don't know. I feel like their teams usually had some sort of like specialty for each person to kind of run through.
Yeah, I was the op guy.
Okay.
A lot of the time, but honestly, the op guy also does all the other things.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, no, you definitely, when you're at that level, you definitely got to be able to adjust. And
yeah, I feel like the op is like the one thing where if you're good with the op, you're pretty good with everything.
Because
you got to be just really fast.
Did you have a favorite map?
Oh man, not really. I mean, we played a lot of maps. One of the Cal maps in the day, it used to be, Contra was a fun map. I don't know if you remember Contra.
I do.
They renamed all these maps, for Go. They actually took all the Cal maps or the CPL maps and things. And they like renamed them and kind of reskinned them and put them into Counter-Strike Go and 2, I guess.
Yeah.
Like Strike used to be Seasons. I don't know. I can't even remember what the names were anymore, but they used to have different names.
Yeah. One of my favorites was Italy. It wasn't the most competitive map, but I always thought that one was pretty cool.
Oh, Italy. And Italy, was it Italy or Inferno? Wasn't it called Inferno?
There's both. There is an Inferno. Yeah.
There's an Italy? Oh man.
Yeah.
I do like Inferno. Inferno was fun.
Inferno was a lot of fun. Yeah, yeah. That was a good map. That was also I felt like that was one of those maps that was played more as a competitive map than it was like a casual one because of, I think it had a little bit more difficulty to it, but
it definitely did. Cool. Well, we had, so this is back before, you know, the real competitive invitational teams and invitational tournaments really started. They were just kind of kicking up esports wise back then. So like, I kind of missed out on all that because it was too early.
Sure.
Almost, right? Because we actually had practiced and were probably good enough to play in some of those at the time, those invitational leagues, but which didn't exist, right? It was what was it? There were the DreamHacks that kind of had started up in the was it in MLGs, Major League Gaming, those tournaments that would start every once in a while. But we got invited to one, actually. I think it was an MLG, one of those invitational tournaments. I can't even remember, but we were all 16. And so nobody could go. We couldn't get all the people to go.
That's hilarious. That's too good.
Now, you know, nowadays that would have been fine, right?
Sure. Because
you could have been like, hey, I've gotten invited. I'm good enough at this thing that I've gotten invited to go to a tournament to like try to gain sponsors or do well or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that would be, you know, mainstream nowadays. But like back then it was kind of like, what? You have a LAN
party? It's all brand new. Yeah. Did you guys ever do LAN parties? That's how I ended up getting my current job is. I got my job through connections through my Counter-Strike LAN party.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts.
Me and a couple other guys in the Poseyville area, in the county, I guess, because there were only two high schools in our whole county. We did a couple LAN parties, played some Counter-Strike, did some other stuff, but mostly it was online people for me, for the most part.
Yeah. What ended your Counter-Strike career? Are you still playing? Are you going to like, are you playing Counter-Strike 2? God, no. Or that just came out, right? Counter-Strike 2?
I think so.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've heard bad things. I actually have not even played it. I played some Go for a while, for a little bit. Enough had changed, I think. And I had stopped for a while I was in school because I didn't really have as much time. And you just kind of drift away from stuff every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I hadn't played it a while. But now when I go back, right, I have like moments of brilliance where like the old muscle memory comes back and I'm just like wrecking people. But like, honestly, I just don't. It's just. I feel like I should be better than I am. and it's frustrating. Does that because I remember totally. How good I used to be, and then you try to do it, and you're just like, man, I'm just slower.
Yeah,
like my brain's moving faster because it remembers how to do it, but my muscles are just like, nope, sure. I can't do this anymore.
A lot of that muscle memory and just the hours. Just think about how many hours you put in to get that good, right?
Yeah. Like, so back. That's funny. So before Steam started tracking how many hours you put into these games, right? We always did the chats that you would use, right? X-Fire. You remember X-Fire? That was like the chat that you'd use to like hit people up to play. Because it was all Ventrilo servers.
Or
TeamSpeak back in the day. TeamSpeak and Ventrilo. And there were no free versions of those. Like if you wanted to use them, you had to use, like somebody had to pay for a server. Yeah, X-Fire. But X-Fire would track if you were logged on to X-Fire while playing a game. It would track the number of hours that you put into the game, right? Mm-hmm. And I think at one point I had checked my X-Fire account and it was something like 15,000 hours or something like that of Counter-Strike. Like I tell you, like I would come home from school and I would play Counter-Strike until midnight and I would go to bed. Like it was like every day. It was actually probably not healthy.
Your parents didn't care?
I had good grades. I did all the extracurriculars, like basically all of them, right? We did all the academic teams.
That's awesome.
So they did all sorts of stuff. And so they had no reason to care if everything else was going good, I guess.
No, that's awesome. No, that's super cool. So you get older and you go to college, you can't play Counter-Strike as much. Do you still kind of keep up with gaming as Counter-Strike kind of goes away? Or I don't know what's your relationship with gaming as you get older?
So I say in undergrad, when I was my freshman year, we had to stay in the dorm. So I went to Indiana University for undergrad. When I was there, my roommate at the time, because they forced you into a roommate situation because you go into the dorms. Mm-hmm. I think my roommate may have had some like personal issues or something, but he like couldn't sleep in the room or be in the room at any point without the TV playing Sports Center on max volume, like an old CRT TV. Like you think I'm joking, but I really am not. Like like middle of the night, it was Sports Center. So it did give me something to talk to my dad about a lot more. Cause like, I swear I knew everything there was to know about what the happenings in the sports world. Right. Because it was just constantly playing in the background.
Sure.
But, I met a girl at one point and I think I stayed at her dorm for like an entire semester because I just couldn't stand my own.
Did you ask him like, yo, what's up, dude? Like
a couple of times, but he just never talked. So he ended up dropping out of school, I think, at one point because he just never left the room like at all.
Wow.
I don't know. It was a weird situation. I kind of just stepped away from it because I just.
Yeah.
So that freshman year, I didn't do that. Then I had several friends, right? We got an apartment just right off of campus. And then from there, I got back into gaming. But some of it was World of Warcraft raiding, World of Warcraft, just everything at the time. And then
so the real obsessive stuff is what you're drawn to. The stuff that you can't just drop in. You're spending hours and hours doing these things.
You know, I was at the time, but I feel like recently that's definitely shifted. But
sure.
I just don't have hours and hours of time to do it anymore.
Right. That's the difference is then you were younger and you had, you know, time to kill. So. We'll spend 15,000 hours in Counter-Strike.
Oh, right, that's over like 10 years. So it's that's still terrible.
That's still a lot of time. Yeah.
And that's not nearly as much time as some of the people that played World of Warcraft that I had on my friends list on X-Fire. They had hundreds of thousands of hours. And you're just like, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
That's only tracking what is there when you're logged into the chat program. It doesn't even count for stuff when you're not logged in.
Right. That's hilarious. So did you get drawn into Twitch and things like that when you get more interested in like World of Warcraft and as that shows up? Or what about speedruns? Did you ever speedrun anything or have any interest in watching speedruns?
So I would say that every time GDQ started, I think at one point I was just, you know, watching on Twitch stuff because I would watch people do stuff on Twitch just casually while I was doing other stuff or playing games myself. And I think I saw GDQs and it was just, you know, fascinating. Mm-hmm. But like the first one, and so like I couldn't stop watching it, and you know I've kind of just watched a lot of it ever since. And I always thought, you know, hey, it'd be kind of fun to like do that or learn some of that, but I never like pulled the trigger and did any of it because I was still playing, you know, I was playing the Counter or the StarCraft 2s, and I was playing World of Warcraft still,
right.
All sorts of other just games. But I I think, you know, at one point I pulled the trigger. My cousin was playing the this is probably 2019, late 2019, middle of 2019 or so, was playing the Symphony of the Night randomizer, right?
Okay.
And so I was like, you know what? Screw it. I don't even know that I ever played. We had a PlayStation growing up. I don't think I ever even played Soten.
Mm-hmm.
But I like, so I learned the randomizer for Soten and some of the speedrun strats for that and played that for a little while. I kind of, I don't know. I thought it would be fun because obviously all the main tournaments, the speed gaming stuff and everything like that would be displayed on Twitch. And because mm-hmm. of the algorithm, it would show me that kind of stuff because all the GDQ that I'd watched on Twitch and the kind of things that I was watching. And, you know, I would just watch the rando races.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, that'd be really fun to do, but I don't know how to set it up and I don't really want to. Like, I was just like, I never pulled the trigger on it. It was hard enough for me to pull the trigger to even start playing the Soten randomizer with right. my cousin. I only did it because my cousin was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And like at the time, every single everything that I wanted to learn about how to do, I would just try to find a subreddit for it and see mm-hmm. if Reddit could tell me how to do it. Because sure. I don't know. That's what I would do. So in the Link of the Past randomizer, the Link of the Past Reddit is active, but probably not the most active thing.
Right.
Right, because most of that's done through Discord now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of like went in there and I it just happened to be that day Lumaga had made, or maybe it was Temp, somebody had made the GoMod Podcast Mentor Tournament posting like on the Reddit. Like they just decided to make a Reddit post about it. And I was like, hey, I've never really done anything, but I've considered, I made a post about how I was like interested, but I had never pretty much pulled the trigger. But I thought that like learning all the tricks and stuff would be kind of something that I would focus on and be able to do. And I think Lumaga responded and said, oh, yeah, no, you're just the kind of person that, you know, we like to be in the mentor tournament because we got to like get people involved in the game. And I said, all right, sounds good. So I signed up and I was like, all right, well, I've never even set the randomizer up. I figured all that stuff out. And I was like, all right, well, I've got a week to do the two seeds, the qualifier seeds. Right. And I had never done a randomizer seed.
Mm-hmm.
And so those were my first two seeds, were the two mentor tournament qualifier seeds.
How'd they go? Were you able to finish?
Oh, I finished though.
Mm. Sure.
I think the first seed I did was something like 5+ hours.
Yeah.
The second one was like 4 hours and a half or something like that. So, I mean, these were just open seeds.
Sure.
So I didn't really know what I was doing.
But I mean, did you have a memory? Like, did you replay Link to the Past or did you have a...
Beforehand? No.
Well... I mean, you played Link to the Past as a kid, but did you ever go back and play it at all over the years?
I don't, maybe. I think I did probably once or twice because my brother got me in on this thing where we were going to try to beat all the Zelda games like in order, like on an emulator.
Sure.
And so we played through a bunch of them. He actually went all the way through, but I think I got through Link to the Past. And then I was like, all right, that's enough. I was not a huge Nintendo 64 person. Like, I don't know. There was something about the camera that it just didn't click with me, right?
Sure.
As a PC gamer, right? It was just so hard for me to, like, change PC, like, a top-down 2D stuff. Like, Link of the Past, perfect. It's fine, right? I understand that. When I have to, like, lock the camera to turn it around and things like that, that really threw me for the 64, especially after all the PC gaming. So I didn't do that, but so I may have played Link to the Past a couple of times over the years, but nothing serious and no speed runs or anything like that. And so I went in almost completely blind for probably more than a decade of not playing Link to the Past. And I actually played these two seeds.
Yeah, that first seed, I'm thinking like, how did you have like a map tracker that kind of gives you an idea of where everything was? Because I did play Link to the Past quite a bit. And I remember my first seed, I had like no idea where so many of these like chests were.
Well, like I said, I had been watching rando racing for months.
I see. Right?
And I would always look and be like, oh, I wonder if there's more because the main tournament had been going on. And I was like, oh, like who's playing now? And you know, I kind of kept track of that year. Didn't know the people, obviously, other than that they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, you know, kind of just watched it. And so I had a generalized knowledge of where some stuff was, having just watched and have heard people commentate the races and stuff, which I thought the commentating was like the coolest thing, like to get into it, like to be excited about it. Yeah. And so that was my knowledge. It was basically a general knowledge of how to beat the game from back in the day using a game FAQs to do 100%, you know, later, and then watching people play the randomizer. And so it took me a really long time to finish the seeds. I remember doing it. It was like really late at night and I had to go to work the next day, but I was like, I don't think I can stop in the middle of the seed. Yeah. It's a qualifier seed and I really would like to get in this mentor tournament. And so we finished them. I got much better the second seed. I think sure. the first seed was a current jump seed that year. So if you current jump, you could finish it in like an hour and 10 minutes.
How are you supposed to know that, right?
Yeah. Like, I definitely did not know how to current jump or that it was even an option.
Sure. Yeah. What year? So this is like 2019?
Was it 2019 or 2020? What class was I in? I don't even remember anymore.
Was it during COVID?
I think it was during COVID. Okay. It's hard for me to remember. I feel like COVID, like I think back of COVID and there's like pre-COVID and post-COVID, but anything that happened in a year before or after, I don't know what it was.
Right. It all just blends together.
I like lose the time.
It's a fog of time for sure. So you joined the mentor tournament then?
Yeah, I was ranked. Of all the people. So they rank everybody, right? So we rank everybody according to their qualifier times to like seed them originally so they could do the initial Swiss pairings, right? I was number 63 of 64 entrants.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
How was your experience in the mentor tournament? Did you feel like you learned a lot? Did you make friends?
I think a little of both. I mean, I definitely learned a lot. But and I'll say this, and I think I've said this before in several Discords, but like the mentor tournament is great. And you get out of it what you put in.
Sure. Yeah,
right. So there are tons of people willing to help. There are tons of people that'll just do casual pickup races. They'll even mentor you through races and do all sorts of things. But if you're only going to come in and just do the races with a mentor, then you can only get so much out of it.
Right.
At the time, I was not a father.
Right. You had more time.
I had much, much more time.
Yep.
And so I did tons of races. I did tons of mentor sessions with lots of different people. Mainly practice sessions with Espion was okay. at the time.
Awesome.
He mentored me through the entirety of the Swiss bracket stages or Swiss stages and everything. And so we played a lot of learning.
So you put yourself into the game to get better. You didn't just expect everyone to help you make you better, right? Like you.
No. I worked on it trying to get better. Yeah. I was like, I don't like to go half cocked in anything. So I like, sure. I really went in on it and I was like, I'm going to get pretty good at this. Like it's fun. I enjoy it. It'll prevent me from buying two games a week on Steam.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And so I think I ended, so that mentor tournament, I went from having a 5 hour seed or something like that, a little over 5 hours in the qualifier seeds to a ton of practice before Swiss started to losing only one game in Swiss and like through all the tiebreakers and stuff. I ended up coming out of the Swiss stage as the number two seed in the entire mentor tournament.
That's impressive, dude. That's super impressive. That means you did do the work and it paid off.
Yeah, so I will highly tout the mentor tournament.
Well, it's important to you, obviously, because it introduced you to the game, it introduced you to the community. But now, aren't you part of the leadership of the mentor tournament, or you're like a community manager over at Go Mode?
Yeah. No, I was a mod for several years, and they asked me this past year to be to help out as a community manager. And so I'm essentially admin. And so I've been doing that a little bit. Umaga's got his War for Hyrule. Been kind of concocting that we've kind of been working on behind the scenes, but like all power to Umaga because he's been doing work trying to get that thing kicked off. Yeah. And it should be really awesome. So
yeah, looking forward to it.
A ton of fun. But yeah, shout outs to Umaga for everything that he does behind the scenes, right? Umaga is great.
Yeah. Awesome dude. It was a pleasure to meet him at SGL too.
Yeah. But I'd say, yeah, as part of the admin team, I guess, or the community managers of Go Mode, it's been fun. I think there's a lot more stuff we want to try to start spinning up going forward to just, you know, continue involvement of new players, old players, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, it's been good. And I'm glad I get to be a part of it because it really does. It really did bring me into the scene. And like, I don't think I would know any of the people I pretty much talk to online now without having come and played.
Right. People find their group, right? There's so many of us here that there's no way you expect everyone just to be friends, right? There's just too many people. So you find the people that you gravitate towards. Do you feel like you found your community or the people that you gravitate towards early on when you were in the Go Mode podcast? Or did it take a while, or how did it work?
Well, so I did a lot of like side work. when I was in the mentor tournament, right? So I did a lot of, you know, practice sessions with mentors and so on and so forth. I ended up over at 40 Bunks practicing a lot just because they had been pretty big and active at doing races all the time. Right. And so the first season of league, Mr. Aaron Snerd, I just kind of randomly messaged him. I'm like, hey, you want to do league or pilot spoiler? Actually, we started with pilot spoiler. We did pilot spoiler tournament the first year that it was a thing. Having not even finished the mentor tournament yet, I think it was still in the Swiss stages when we signed up. I was like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Piloting.
It's a whole other beast, right? Like, it's different.
I'll tell you why. I really hate running with a pilot. I think it's worse. I think it's worse than piloting. Although piloting is really stressful, but I like cannot.
Yeah.
Like if I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing next, so like I think I would be a good runner with the right pilot, if that makes sense. Sure. Right. But like if they're very last second or have to get a whole route together before they tell you anything, like I get so uncomfortable, it's bad. I'm just like, do I open this in Calgary? Like, hold on, right. I'm getting something. And then it's just like, I can't. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Sure. I understand it. I couldn't do it at all. I can't be piloted. I'm with you. It's like, it's just too stressful. So you joined up with Aaron for the league in season 4 as the Rando Babies, you and Norsk Maddie as well. How did that come about? Did that come from you guys teaming up for the pilot?
But me and Aaron, yes. And then Maddie, we asked Maddie, just as another fellow mentee. And so Rando Baby season was a real fun season. It ended on a sour note for us, though. We ended up in the playoffs the first season in.
You guys were in the open, right? Yeah, new members of the community. People don't really know you as much.
Yep, we started open. We were in a group with J.K. Lall and some other people. I couldn't even name them all. So we ended up in second seed in that that group. Right. And so we ended up in the playoffs against J.K. Lall. At the time, though, so I feel like we lost the playoff experience that year, other than Aaron. Right. So Aaron was all good at the time. But I think Maddie had a death in the family like happen like the week we had to play.
Oh, no.
The playoffs. And I had my gallbladder removed the first week of playoffs.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So if you go back, I don't know if you could find it ever, but there's the cross key seed that I played against Jesse in the playoffs. Like I was so high on Oxy because I had just had surgery like 3 days previous.
Oh, right.
And so it was just like, I was out of it, but we couldn't like delay it. And sure. So I had to play it.
Oh man.
But it was, and obviously I don't think Maddie was particularly feeling great at the time. And right. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So I feel like it'd be nice to go back and not have any of that happen, but
sure.
But no, it was a super fun season.
Yeah. I mean, you guys, like you said, making the playoffs in any open or invitational is super tough. So that was awesome. But season 5, you guys got called up to the invitational, right?
Yeah. So Maddie left, picked up John, and then we really wanted to be an invitational. we really wanted to be an invitational. And so we joined like every single, we all started grinding in MG. We picked up every single tournament that we could join. We joined and we just went really hard on playing, like really, really hard to the point where it probably burnt us out. To be honest. Yeah. Like we played so much. I think that was the year that I ended up making brackets of main tournament, which that's a whole story.
But well, let's hear it.
Just the bracket. The bracket wasn't so bad. I think. So getting in, I think that year I actually ended up, they put me in as the shovel thing in the credits of the reveal stream, right? Because you were allowed at that time to do extra seeds, right? For the qualifiers, like to raise your stake, but you know, they'd always count. So I think I ended up doing 2 extra seeds, but I was like way down the list and I did really well in the like 3 extra seeds or something that I did. They ended up, my name was the one they dug out of the grave.
Nice.
which I heard was a joke. Because I was like definitely not in and went to being in
that's awesome.
Very quick. But I remember so groups of that main tournament. I think we had a final game that was me versus Sean Rhapsody at the time. And that it was a basically play in like whoever won was in because of tiebreakers like to brackets. Mm-hmm. And it was a hover seat.
Mm.
And I had never hovered other than like on my own time, just in randomly in, right, in you know, practice seeds and stuff, right? Like yeah. practice seeds and stuff. Like I never thought I would do it. And I think I told John, like John's a pretty good hoverer, right? And he's very good hoverer. But I said, you know what, if it comes to it and it's a hover seed, I will just play for a hover seed. I said, screw it, we're going to go. And so I played it as a hover seed. I was like, oh God, it actually is a hover seed. So I get to the top of GT in the seed and I'm like sweating like crazy. Yeah. Right? And like, yeah. I can hover the Moldorm 2 gap. And I had been doing it for a while, like in practice, but it's a whole different thing when you're nervous. Like it's significantly different. Right. And this is like a play in for main tournament. And we're trying to push really hard to get into invitational to like show that we're, you know, good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 7.5 minutes to hover the Moldorm 2 gap.
Oh, jeez.
that was wow. Great. I think Kaysden and Leoria were actually calming that race.
And you won it? Did you win?
Yeah. No, I won.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
My hookshot was in like locked in pendant mire somewhere. Yeah. With like an ice palace that you never had to even go to.
Yeah.
Like it was a really gross hookshot.
Yeah.
But no, I finally made it.
That's awesome.
But
love the perseverance. That's hilarious.
At that point you have
no other choice, right?
You're like, I'm yeah. gonna live and yeah. die on this hill, right? Yeah,
totally.
But I'll tell you what though, I can hover in a race now with like almost no issues. I was like, you do it that nervous once, you can just be done.
Yeah, for sure. How was your experience going into the Invitational then for season 5?
Oh, so I think the beginning of the season was really good. The way that it like panned out by the end of the season. So like in October, so my son was born in August.
Mm.
And so that it became less, but both less a priority for me, but also I just didn't have the time to like, and I was like constantly tired and stressed. It was just the end of that season was kind of.
And you guys had kind of burnt yourself out, right? Like just with as much gaming as you did.
Yeah, we had kind of burnt ourselves out, and that was bad. I think at that time too, like John's work schedule has shifted to a different shift, and with me having the baby, I was hardly playing. Aaron was going through some stuff with school, mm-hmm. And so like it was just the end of that season. We just like kind of didn't have stuff going on. Like we there was no playing happening.
Yeah.
So that kind of ended, but that was, I mean, we had a good time. We were glad we made it, but again, you're right. We really did burn ourselves out.
It happened. Like the game is like addictive, right? And you want to get better and you see the progression as you play it more and more. And it's like, grind, grind, grind. And then you grind yourself until there's nothing left. And then you gotta have to pick up the pieces and figure out like, all right, where's a healthy place for me to enjoy this game and not, you know, constantly be stressing out and burning myself out. And then when you have a baby, you don't have even less of a choice because you have no time for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I like to say with the baby, it's like you get to pick between like leisure time and sleep.
Right.
And depending on the kind of person you are, I usually choose leisure time late at night.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of sleep, but then eventually that kind of backfires on you.
Yeah, it totally catches up for sure. So season 6 comes, rando kids go. You guys started out as rando babies, then became rando toddlers, and now rando kids for season 6. Not the season you guys were probably hoping for.
Yeah, I honestly, we hardly played at all. Like it was like I didn't have any time still, like at all.
Mm hmm.
And even when I did have time, it was when John was asleep because his work schedule, and Aaron was not playing much at the time too, from some personal stuff.
Yep.
And so we just never got to play. Like honestly, so the last week, me and Aaron had a great time playing co-op in the Intermiser week at the end against Potato Pouch, right?
Yep.
And so obviously very good team, which they were actually reasonably close races, which is kind of funny. Because Aaron and I hadn't played a single game of co-op together the entire year.
Wow.
Like it had been more than a year, right? So we just our times stopped matching up to the point where we just never were online at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it takes a little bit of the fun. I think the point of League is to play with people.
Yeah, for sure.
And so like, obviously we're all still friends and it like to play together. We just don't actually ever meet up at the same time anymore. Like our play times no longer matched up.
Yeah.
So it took a lot of the fun out of it for me
mm-hmm.
because I wasn't able to play with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of that's kind of how the season went. Just, I didn't have a really good time for the most part this season.
Yeah, because you kind of lost perspective a little bit, right? Like, this is not what we really signed up to do. And with the different time zones and different jobs and different kids, you know, it just adds up, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
So is this the end of the Rando children, do you think? Are they, you know, there's going to be a while until season seven. Yeah, seven. Have you talked with John and Aaron about the future, or do you think you're going to be moving on if you do play League again?
I don't know. I don't know where John is. I don't want to speak for them, but I think John's done.
Yeah,
pretty much with anything that's not purely co-op.
Mm-hmm.
Just I think he just doesn't like the one-on-one aspect at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where Aaron's going to be then. And obviously I'd like to play again, but preferably with people that, you know, have a similar skill level and similar like time overlap, right? So that we can actually play. And because I loved, I think the part of being in the 40 box thing, whenever League was going on, where we were doing, you know, pickup races every night, every other night or whatever, it was just that there were like seven people playing a race, or like five or six people playing a race, just play together. And I just didn't have any of that because I was just kind of lost.
Sure. Yeah. And the nice thing about having kids is they do get older and it makes time a little bit easier. You know, they're not up at craziest times as they get older usually, but
yeah, that's true. He's been now about 10 o'clock or so, he'll go to bed and then I'll have a couple hours. And so that's enough time.
Yeah.
Play a scene or play some stuff. So.
Sure. Now you have to explain to me this. The Rando babies, Rando kids, Rando toddlers have player icons. Every team has player icons, but I don't know if a team has a better set of player icons than your team does. Explain, if anybody goes to the League website and clicks on the team, you can see the three icons. What happened? Where is this come from? It's all three of you shirtless holding an animal.
So it's the most mundane story ever. Okay. Right. So one day at my house, I was just hanging. It was the summer. It was warm. Uh-huh. I just didn't have my shirt on. I had like pajama pants on. I was just hanging out. I grabbed my cat. That cat loves me. His name's Henry. He's awesome. He's looks like a Siamese cat, but he's really just a mostly Siamese cat. And so I just held him over my shoulder. And he like looked, and my wife was coming out of the bathroom and just randomly took a picture of us. And I had that face on with the stupid facial hair.
It's the stash. It's the hair. It's the shirtless. It's the cats looking at the cat. It's just too good, man. Like, it's hilarious.
It became like a meme for us. And so my wife thought it was the funniest thing ever, which it really is.
It really is.
It's an excellent picture.
Yes.
And so she took it. She printed it off. And we used to do this is pre-COVID. So we used to do a Thursday night bar thing with a bunch of the chemists and my our group, and we went and every Thursday had drinks and wings. She printed off and framed like 9 copies of this photo and just gave it to random people at this bar that were there every week. And so that picture is still hanging behind the bar because the waitress and the owner thought it was the most hilarious thing. So like, it's hanging by the bar. So they thought it was, I made it my Discord picture at one point because why not?
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And so that was my icon like the previous year. And then this year, I think we got together last year, not this past year, but the year before. So 2022 SGL and met up and decided it would be awesome if we all had the same pose and thought.
That's great.
But Aaron didn't have an animal, so he has a stuffed one.
Yeah.
But so that's where we just came from. So we were all watching the reveal stream. We were just ready for the reactions because it was so funny.
It is good. It is really good. Speaking of SGL, tell me about your experience. You won two of them, right?
Yeah. Well, the first one was not a great experience. It's because I went in, I stayed with John and Aaron, which that was great. But I only got to stay for like 2 days. I only played like one game, or I think I played two games, and I never got to play Lumaga or anything. He was in my group of the year because my wife had called me and my son was in the hospital for something. And so I had to rush home to the hospital. And so that was, I didn't even get to stay for that one. Right. Oh, I just kind of showed up. This past year, I had a really good time. It was fun. Me and Drossi roomed together.
Mm.
So that was fun. got to meet you. That was great. We had a nice Baldur's Gate conversation in the car. That was
man. I could talk Baldur's Gate all day long, man.
Yeah, but I had a good time. We joined the Mega Man X tournament randomly because there weren't very many people. I think Siberian Bull had started it. Somebody else was going to come play him, and then they couldn't come, so there was nobody in the tournament. So me and Power to Mario just like, hey, we'll learn the speed run. And we learned the speed run and played each other, and then I got to play the Mega Man X finals at SGL.
You learned it that weekend, right? Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
That's crazy. That's banana.
I kept up with him too. I kept up with Bull until like Sigma 2. It was crazy. I was ahead for a while, apparently.
That's hilarious.
It was good. That's stuff. Good. I got a little trophy because I was second place, even though there were only three of us. It's in my desk.
That's awesome. That's super awesome. If you go to the Discord, the SGL Discord, I think there's a picture of you, Bull, and PTM posing with the trophies. Yeah,
Mario was great. Mario did not learn the game as fast as I did.
You had experience with that game other than the randomizer, right? Like, you were at least a little familiar with it?
Well, I was familiar with the game because I played it. That one, I think I've actually picked up several times over the years because I don't know. That game's great. Sure. It is a lot more fun on hardware, too, than it was on an emulator, that specifically Mega Man.
Yeah. So do you plan on attending future SGLs, especially since it's so close for you?
Well, I kind of I don't have to decide until like right before because I'm so close.
Yeah, that makes it nice. You don't have to spend a ton of money to fly out, all that kind of stuff. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. If I had to fly to SGL, I would have to go to Dulles. So that would be kind of pointless.
Right. Totally. How do you feel overall about your place in the community? Like, we talked about you being a part of the Go Mode like admin team basically, and you know, you're such a positive dude. Like, the one thing that I gained from meeting you from SGL is just how your energy, you got so much like fun energy to be around. Like, I feel like I gained life by being around you. You let off so much like joy and stuff. So how do you feel like your spot is within the community, and how do you feel about Rando overall?
I'd say I like where I'm at. I play me and Flip have been playing a whole bunch recently. I think we were in your Crosskeys tournament, which by the way needs to expand next year because I think your reception, I'm sure, was excellent.
I appreciate that.
People loved it. But yeah, no, I've been playing with them quite a bit, you know, doing the Go Mode thing, trying to help run some of that. No, I feel good. Rando in general, I definitely don't feel like I'm as good as I was when I was really, really grinding. Mm-hmm. But I think it's almost like riding a bike where you kind of, you have a level that you can get to if you start to grind, and then you kind of like regress a little bit, but you only regress to a certain point, which you probably feel the same way, not playing nearly as much as you were.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But I think I stopped, my perspective, I think, switched when I had the kid. Like, there's a fundamental change. People say this, like when you have kids, that there's like a change in what's important, or like it'll, everything changes after.
Yeah.
You laugh about it. Because you're like, nah, sure.
Right.
And then it happens. And then all of a sudden, like, nothing matters.
Yeah.
Except for, right. And so, like, I don't know. I can just laugh at a loss nowadays.
Sure.
Like, it is what it is, right? Like, I didn't go there. They did go there. Like, maybe you made the higher percentage play and they made the lower one and it didn't work out. But, like, okay. So,
yeah.
You know, it became less important. And I just accept the fact that it's randomized.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Well, let's jump into the last question then. How do you handle tilt? Do you handle tilt well? And what's your approach, whether it's in the middle of a seed or towards the end of a race that you've lost?
I mean, unless it's Ambrosia. Ambrosia tilts me by the fact that it is Ambrosia.
Do people still play Ambrosia? I feel like it's kind of a dead format.
I hope not.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think generally during a seed, like, I'll get disgruntled and I'll just kind of go through the motions. Like, if I know I've lost, like, there's certain times when you're just like, there's pretty much no way I'm winning this seed because I have done something extraordinarily dumb, or you skip something that you shouldn't skip because you're like, oh, I'm going to make a play. You go back to it and it's boots or something. Right. And you're like, all right, sure. But so I'll get a little maybe down on myself while I'm playing, but I never get to the point where I'm just like suddenly making mistakes everywhere. Like, I don't like to really, really tilt. Cause I would say that. So even in the main tournament against Andy, when I like completely like misread a bunch of logic and two seeds in a row, basically with huge leads and blew them.
Right.
Like even then I didn't really get tilted, and I kind of looked at it like, oops.
Yeah.
But I mean, you kind of hit it on the head. I like to be generally very positive person. Like, I just like to like kind of look at the best. Like, I have fun playing the game. And so regardless of what really happens, like, I have a good time. I kind of gravitate recently, especially towards kind of modes where it's a lot longer. And so a single decision can kind of cost you a whole bunch of time. So like, when you do lose, it's like, oh, it's going to happen. Like, you can't win them all. Like, I played a bunch of Doors. Me and Flip had been doing a bunch of door seeds and things like that. And so I kind of like the more complex modes in general. There's something fun to me about them. Like, I enjoy them more than just like a simple open seed anymore. And so that's kind of where I'm at with the game. It's like, I'll still join all the tournaments and I'll still do my best. And I say all the tournaments, I'll join many of the tournaments, but, you know, scheduling for me also starts to be a little bit harder with the kid.
Sure.
I don't like to burden my wife with doing stuff when the baby's not sleeping. Right. Like, I like to help out since kind of we've got him all the time. And so that becomes a little bit of an issue. But ultimately, you know, I just enjoy playing the game. So I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, this is what I really enjoy about you. And the times that we've played, we had a couple different times where we've met up in the league and stuff. And I don't know. I feel like your approach is just so healthy where it's like, sure, you get pissed that you lose or you know, you're upset that you lose, but you don't ever take it out on people. And you just bring joy no matter what the situation is. And I'm super drawn to people like that. So it's been a pleasure chatting, man.
Yeah, man. No, thanks for having me on. It's been fun.
Huge shout outs to Vex for coming on the show. Really, really appreciated him coming and chatting and, you know, sitting on this episode. We did this a few weeks ago. So it's been a while since we chatted, but I had a blast talking to him and just think he's an awesome dude. Really loved hearing his story. And as I mentioned, just love listening to the guy chat. Like, the guy can talk and he's a good talker and has a lot to say. And I really just enjoy who he is and all he has to say. So awesome member of the community and doing good things over at Go Mode as well. So make sure you give Vextover a follow over on Twitch. We got links to that in the show notes. Next week, we'll be back. I believe we've got Shady Force coming up next. And Shady was someone I was trying to get on the show a couple of seasons ago, but had a kid and just didn't have time. So now the kid's a little bit older and has a little bit more time, was able to sit down with me. And man, just one of my favorite people in the community in general is Shady. So excited for you to hear that one coming up next week. And then we've got a bunch more already recorded and ready to go down on the pipeline. Working on a couple of drafts as well before we finish up season number 5. But really appreciate everyone sticking with the show. If you want more of it, come to the Discord. 216pod.com has the links to the Discord. Lots of sports talk going on over there, especially with baseball and hockey. Hockey's about to start the playoffs, I think, pretty soon. You know, we kicked off the baseball season. The Mariners are terrible, but still enjoy watching them. You know, basketball is going on. We just had the men's and women's NCAA Final Four. That was a lot of fun to watch, and it was cool to have people participate in the tournament bracket. So yeah, lots going on over the 216 Discord. Really appreciate everyone listening, and yeah, excited about the last half of season number 5. So stick with it. We got some excellent guests, and yeah, excited about this season. So that's gonna do it. Really appreciate everyone hanging out, and we'll see you next week for Shady Force. Thanks for listening. See ya.